tonight on another very special one-on-one. We're delighted to be joined by a guy formerly known as Todd the Killer Kelman. It's Todd Kelman.
Thanks, Davey.
Todd, the idea of this is to try and get you back to being that Todd the Killer Kelman and sort of go right back through your career, right from day one. And I suppose the best place to start is back in Calgary. Do you remember the first time that the skates were strapped on?
Jesus, I thought you were talking, taking me back to my first time in Belfast, all the way to Calgary. It's a long time ago. first of all, is Simon Kitchen ahead of me on the Northern Ireland, the one-on-ones?
He was kind of like a test case.
All right.
And then we're going for like celebrities now.
So Calgary, let me think. I first played hockey, actually. I think first time I skated was in Edmonton, actually. My family moved. My brother and sister were both born in Edmonton, and then I was born in Calgary. So we moved from Edmonton when I was probably three, and I skated on an outdoor rink. There was an outdoor rink just around from where we grew up in Edmonton. And my first memory of skating on the outdoor rink, my dad challenged, I think, everyone on the ice pad to a race, and he toe-picked into the end boards and broke his ribs.
Ooh.
And it was horrific. As a three-year-old, I remember my dad just rolled over, broken ribs, and he had to go to the hospital. So that's my first skating experience. But my first team in Calgary, I was probably 4 years old, and I played for the Bonavista Junior Tyke Flyers. And we had Philadelphia Flyers uniforms. And that was 4 years old.
I think Stevie Robinson has that jersey, but
he probably does.
I go on as a reference point, you know, that your career is listed across several websites and the internet, but we look at your first sort of junior team, I guess, in the Vernon Makers. Yeah. Decent numbers for, were you a D-man back then, or were you just like offensive? Or?
No, yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. Before we get to that, when I was... I know the old-time Giants fans will find this kind of interesting, but one of the guys that I played like pretty much my whole life with, who lived kind of down the street from me, went to school with him, was Sean Selmser, who played 1 year for the that's actually why he came to play in Belfast that year when he was playing in Ayr and the Scottish Eagles folded, and then I talked to Wiss about bringing him in. I didn't think he'd be there for one weekend and then going on to Austria, a career in Austria. But we grew up together our whole lives and played together from the time we were probably 5 years old. So
pretty good weekend. Sean Selmser,
yeah, was a good
weekend. But, you go through a junior career in early 90s, you take the opportunity, NCAA school, Bowling Green. Any good stories from the old university days?
We got to hit Vernon first. You've probably never heard the story about back in Vernon, and he was never supposed to play hockey again, Davey.
Go on.
You never knew that?
No.
Yeah, so when I was 17, I was playing in Vernon and having a pretty good season. Back then, it was right around the time when, like, lots of people were getting, like, hit from behind, and there was two or three guys that had been paralyzed in junior leagues and in university, I was playing in Chilliwack, just outside of Vancouver, and I made a pass, came around the net, made a pass, and got absolutely blindsided, basically from behind, sort of from the side by one of the tough guys on the other team, and my back, the boards in Chilliwack were cemented into the ground, and so there was no give on them; they were literally cemented into the ground, and my back just bounced on the edge of the boards, which was 6 inches from the glass to the boards, a lip of about 6 inches, and my spine just bounced on it three times, and I broke three vertebrae. And luckily, my sister's mother-in-law, who lived in Vancouver, she just happened to be at the game, and she was like the head nurse of like a trauma unit in a Vancouver hospital. So she jumped the boards and kind of took care of everything, and made sure they didn't move me, and got the collar on me, and all that kind of stuff. And I was in the hospital for about 3 weeks, and I was in a steel brace from the neck to the neck down from for maybe 4 months, and and then all the schools that I was talking to before stopped talking to me, and the only school that really talked to me before and then after was Bowling Green. That's why I went to Bowling Green.
I don't know whether we're allowed to tell, well, I've been told the story, whether it's true or false, that the old nickname that was started with, the Todd the Killer Kelman nickname. Did that come about when you were at the university, or was that in
That
Vernon?
was junior. That was Vernon.
Is that
Vernon.
a story we're allowed to tell, or is that
No,
just that's just left blank forever?
that's in the book. That's when the book comes out, Davey.
Good times at university.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I went to I got down there. I was a true freshman, so I was 18 years old, and I spent 4 years there. Probably four of the most enjoyable time years of my life. I loved it. We had a really good team. I played with some. I played with my best buddy from there is a guy named Mike Johnson, who right out of university went to Toronto. He signed with his hometown team, the Maple Leafs, and he played for Toronto, played for Tampa Bay, played for Phoenix, and finished in well, he played a year for Montreal, I think, and then he finished in St. Louis, but had a great career. Now he's on now he's with the NHL Network, one of their main commentator guys. So it was pretty cool that he made it. He was my roommate for all 4 years. Todd Reirden, who's the coach of the Washington Capitals, was one of our captains my freshman year. So he was a senior. So he was the fourth year guy when I was my first year guy. Sean Pronger, who's Chris Pronger's older brother, who also played in the NHL. Brian Holzinger was on my team, who played in the NHL. So we had a good team, we had a good group of guys. And I mean, lots of fun. I mean, anyone that went to university, it's an amazing experience. And I know there's kind of two routes in hockey. Some guys go junior, junior A, like major junior, and play in the OHL or the WHL, and then go pro. And I chose university, and I'm glad I did. One of the best experiences. I think it's a very different experience than playing junior hockey, and especially getting to go away to the States. It was a lot of fun.
Was there pressure on you to, study, come up with good results? Did you qualify with anything, or was it mainly focused on the hockey?
It's weird because I think sometimes they think you're just going to be stupid and won't be able to do the classes. I think Bowling Green was actually pretty good about being focused on school. It was probably easier to graduate playing hockey than it was a normal student, because the hockey team and the athletics department basically made sure that you went to, like we went to study hall every night, and so you were kind of forced to do homework for 2 hours. So you could either screw around for 2 hours, or you could just get your stuff done. And and we were our coach made us go to class every week, and we had to basically, you were told to have as close to it 100% attendance as you could. And so most of us did really well, and graduated on time and all that kind of stuff. And I spent a couple summers there, and I mean, it's a great opportunity. I don't know if I would have been able to go to university, not because of grades, but just because of money. If I hadn't got a scholarship. So my plan was always to get a scholarship to kind of ease the burden for my family, to rather than having to pay to go to university somewhere. So yeah, worked out really well.
And then at the end of the university career comes probably one of the biggest turning points in your whole life, where you end up coming to Europe. But was there ever an opportunity for you to stay, go to coach, down these higher leagues? Was the offers just not there? What was the catalyst for coming to London?
Okay, so I was drafted by St. Louis, right? And
Yep.
at the time, I was never invited to the camp or anything. I don't have a great story about why I didn't make it. I just wasn't good enough. I'm one of the guys that can just admit he wasn't good enough. But but when I was done university, and Mike was obviously getting loads of calls from, like all the top agents and stuff like that, and then I got a call, and because you have an agent. If you get drafted, you're gonna have to get an agent to talk to the team for you, because you don't really just talk directly to the team. And so St. Louis, said you can come to the camp, not in the NHL camp, but you come to our American League camp. But you can kind of do the math, right? You can look and be like, okay, they've got six guys under contract in the NHL, which means they have, another six in the American League. So the likelihood is you're gonna play in the East Coast League. And I think I can't remember who their affiliate was, but it didn't really seem that appealing. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to go home and I think I'm just going to get a job. I have a university degree now. I'm going to get a job. And I was working a summer job training hockey players actually in like a skating treadmill and an off-ice program. And I got a call from Toledo, which is like an East Coast League team. And it was right by Bowling Green. So I thought, oh, this is great. I can actually like a lot of my friends are still at school. It's 20 minutes from Bowling Green. And I did, I did a full interview with their like president at the time, I thought it went really well. It's, he asked some weird questions. Like, yeah, he asked like, what kind of voice I feel like I have, what kind of broadcaster I feel like I sound like, and I thought these are really weird questions, but whatever. And then about the third interview, I realized that they were interviewing me for a play-by-play job, not a hockey job, because I'd taken broadcasting with my undergrad degree, right? And I hadn't applied for anywhere. Because I thought I'd get a hockey job, but they were the only team that called me. So there I was thinking they were after asking me to play for the their team, but they actually just wanted someone to take the color commentary job. So I obviously didn't take it and went back to Calgary. And then I was working the summer job, and my coach at Bowling Green came to Calgary to do like a Team Canada training camp with a bunch of other coaches. It was like a coaching clinic. And one of the coaches on the course with him was Jim Fiorchuk, who was the coach of the Bracknell Bees. And my coach, Jim Fiorchuk, was talking one night and said, yeah, do you have any guys that are like kind of like right out of school that would be cheap and single and could play in our league? And he's like, I don't know much about your league, but I got a guy. He's working at the rink that this course is coming on. You can go meet him for lunch. And he did. And then that was it. And then I was a Bracknell Bee. So I went to Bracknell. I said to myself, I'd go for 1 year and then, kind of tour around Europe afterwards, maybe, and then get back home and get a real job. And so I played a year there and then toured around Europe with my buddy and then who was playing in Edinburgh in the league below actually at the time. And then I came back and I thought, oh, I'll go give it a go again. And then I gave it another year. And I think, like Jim Fiorchuk was only coaching there for 1 year. And then Dave Whistle took over the second year. And I really liked Wiss as a guy. I was really like, I mean, he was older than me on the team when I got there, as in he was kind of like one of the veteran guys. Him and Rob Stewart were both on Bracknell with me. And those guys were just like just two of my favorite guys I've ever met in hockey. And they kind of like look after me and always included the young guys and everything. My roommate at the time, Brian Greer, who's the goalie, we loved hanging out with Wiss and Stewie. We had kind of a split. We had like a bunch of young guys and then a bunch of old guys, and it was just a nice mix. And when Wiss got the coaching job, I was like, man, I'd love to play for this guy. And then for the next 2 years in Bracknell and then the next three in Belfast, that was my guy. And my last year in Belfast or in Bracknell, we won the league. And like, Bracknell, I don't know if they've ever won any league before or after that, but I mean, it was kind of a shock to the rest of the league. We used to have the coaches, the coach of Manchester, who were playing out of the MEN arena back then, used to not even come to play. Like when we played Manchester, he would just send his assistant coaches because he didn't think we should be in the same league as them because of our rink and stuff. And we ended up winning the league that year. So that was something. And that's where, that's the first in Bracknell's where I played with Colin Ward and Paxton Schulte and Kevin Real and a lot of the guys that became Giants with me. So
just took my question away there, Todd. If you look at the rosters over the 3-4 years that you were in Bracknell, it grew and grew towards almost what the Belfast Giants became. You've named them there, Paxton and Wardy and Goodwin and Riel, yourself, Shane Johnson, Dave Whistle. If we can gloss over the Bracknell years, you've spoke about the championship. When Dave Whistle took the job in Belfast and came to you to say, there's an opportunity here to come to Belfast, how easy a decision was that to make?
He never did.
He didn't, right? Okay.
Do you want to know why? Because he wasn't allowed to. There was a rule. He could only talk. He could only, I think it was like, he could take two guys with him, or maybe it was three.
Right.
And so he obviously was taking Stewie.
Yeah.
And then he took Kevin Real, smart move, probably our best player of the year before him in Bracknell. And then maybe Paxton was the third, but it might have just been the two of them that he was allowed. And it was kind of like a gentleman's rule between Bracknell and Wiss that he wouldn't take everyone, right? So Stewie called me and said, Wisp, there's this rule that he can't take anyone. And I was like, oh man, that's too bad. I'd love to go there. It sounds amazing. He goes, oh, it's amazing. I'm going. It's going to be amazing. Wisp has said great things about it. And he's like, the thing is, there's no rule about that you can't call Wisp. He just can't call you. And so I was like, oh, okay, I got it. So I called Wisp and said, hey, Wisp, I would like to come play for you in Belfast. And he's like, oh, and basically kind of we laughed. And he's like, yeah, I didn't call you, did I? And I'm like, nope. And then Wardy actually was visiting me at my house in Calgary. And I told Wardy to do the same thing, to call Wisp. And so he called Wisp too. And so that's how me and Wardy got there. Paxson might have been before. Paxson, we might have called Packer too and told him to come there. And Johnny was there. Johnny did the same thing. Johnny called Wisp. So before you knew it, there were seven of us. I think it was seven. I think it was me. There was me, Stewie, Colin Ward, Johnny, Paxton, Kevin Real, Todd Goodwin. Seven.
Yeah.
Seven of us. And I mean, Goody was hurt, I think, the year before, so he came. He didn't really play until no. Yeah, I think he. I didn't. Don't think he played till maybe November that first year. I don't remember, but yeah. I mean, the core. So basically, the core of the Bracknell Bees became the core of the Belfast Giants, which is pretty cool.
Do you remember getting into Belfast the first time? Do you remember going on that? I think it's where the Sweden preseason that first year. They obviously was still under construction, played a lot of games on the road, home games, but played in the Sky Dome. We played all over the place. I think we played a game on Blackburn. I think we played just
Yeah, we
wherever
did.
we could get a home.
I remember the trip to Sweden. No one really that first year for Wisp was tough recruiting because it was still up in the air. People weren't sure what to do, like if it was safe, it was that kind of thing. And we went to Sweden with like I think we had like four defense or three defense and maybe eight forwards and like. And we were playing against teams in the league below, like the second league, the Allsvenskan league, with four lines and 7D, and they've been training for a month, and usually Paxton got thrown out in the first period anyways for hitting a guy or punching a guy, and so before you knew it, we're playing with like eight forwards and 4D on this trip around Sweden. Still one of the best, most fun experiences I've ever had. Our tour guide was a guy named Gunnar Svensson, who is kind of a legend in hockey. We to this, Gunnar sadly passed away a couple months ago from cancer, lost his battle to cancer. But to this day, like what's it been 20 years? I'd see him all the time. I'd see him at World Championships or at the CHL draw, and the Gunnar would we'd talk about Sweden, we'd talk about that trip, we'd talk about Wisp. He knows everyone in hockey and everyone. I mean, Dave Sims and Paul Thompson actually became really good buddies with Gunnar as well. Yeah, what a trip. I mean, so funny. I remember the first after the first game, we were supposed to practice the next morning, and I was rooming with Paul Ferone, and we were both young guys, and we wanted to make a good impression. And so the guys were having a couple beers after the game in the lobby, and me and Ferone went to bed at maybe like 11 or something like that. And then we went to practice the next morning, and we got to the rink, and Blatch was there, our trainer, and he's like, "What are you guys doing here?" And we're like, "What do you mean? We have a practice at like 10 a.m. He's like, no, it got canceled. I'm like, when? He's like, about 3 in the morning. Wisp called it. Wisp canceled practice about 3 in the morning. And we're like, oh man, what are we doing? And so it wasn't the best fitness trip, but it was probably the best team bonding trip. When we get together, we still talk. I probably talk to Wardy once a month still, and we laugh about the trip to Sweden all the time. So.
I'm going to give you a Belfast Giants trivia question. See if you can see
Okay.
how much you do remember that. Can you remember who scored the very first Belfast Giants goal?
Paul Ferone.
Very good. Do you know what else was interesting about that first night?
What?
Corey Carlander hat trick
Corey Carlander hat trick in Sweden?
in the first game.
Really? I don't even remember that. I remember when, because Corey scored the first goal, I think, went official goal when it was like against an elite league or a Super League opponent. And so everyone always talked about how Corey scored the first goal, and then Ferone was like, "What are you talking about? I scored the first goal. It was exhibition, but I scored the first goal." So they used to always, Ferone used to always tell Corey that he scored the first goal. Because is that correct? Was it Corey or Real that one of them scored the first official?
I'll have to look that one up for you. Whenever you're waxing lyrical during the this, I'll come up with the answer for you. But yeah, Rocco scored the very first goal. 6th of September 2000.
Isn't that crazy? My God.
Yeah. And then our first ever home game, we played it in Coventry.
Yep, I remember that.
Bad
and Coventry was pretty new. It was a pretty new arena too.
It would have been. And as I say, we played Blackburn, Coventry, Basingstoke, Milton Keynes. And then I think it's early December, the opening night for the Belfast Giants in Belfast. You know, you've talked about this before, but that was a very special occasion.
The first game in Belfast, yeah, man. I still can't believe we lost that. Everyone forgets we lost that first game. And you know, like, fans just assume we won it, but what an experience. Like, that whole week leading up to it, Bob Zeller giving us a bunch of tickets to give away to people and then having to take them all back because it was sold out. And, I mean, there's people that I would run into years later telling me about how they remember that opening night, not having a clue what was going on. We came out for warm-up and the whole crowd, like, it was already packed. The whole place was jammed for warm-up. A lot of people, you know, there was probably some people that understood hockey and stuff, but there was a lot of people that just had no clue. And I remember Bozy and Packer, J-Bo and Paxton talking about who was going to fight first. It was going to be an absolute legend for the team. And Packer fought first and became a legend, you know?
And he I think Paxton also scored the first goal in the Odyssey that night. So
yeah.
he really wrote himself into history that night, got through out of the game, of course. But the Belfast Giants go on a bit of a tear up over the next, 24 months. We win the league the following season. Let's talk about the first time we go on the playoffs.
Well, we won the league that year. Like, when it was very different than winning it with Bracknell. When we won it with Bracknell, we didn't really realize we were in the hunt the whole year until kind of right at the end, because we just always thought, oh, we're doing well, but we're never going to come close to winning it. That was in Bracknell. But then in Belfast, like, we stepped on the ice that second season, and it's the first time that I thought, man, like, this is the best hockey team I've ever been a part of in my whole life. Like, nothing against that first year, but the first year was, I think we recruited who would come kind of thing. You know, like, it wasn't maybe the easiest year of recruiting, but that second year after teams traveled over and saw what we had and just some of the players we got that second year, like seeing Jason Ruff, Ruff was there, Chad Allen, Sandwith, Barron's comes in and lights it up. Like, you just think of that team that second year, how good it was. It was crazy. It was unbelievable. And Mike Bales in net, it's ridiculous. Think of the get, like, Cavi and Mike Bales were our goalies. That's insane. You know, both of them were like legitimate stud starters in the league, and we had both of them. So it was something. That was a special year, and I think we clinched it. Or I don't know if anyone's ever clinched it earlier than that year. I think we clinched it like mid January, didn't we?
If you say so, I honestly think it was early. The playoffs were a lot longer back then. So yeah, the season generally finished a little earlier. So yeah.
Yeah. Season usually finished like mid to end of February, but I think we clinched it like mid January. We clinched it in Bracknell. We tied it. Like, it was a tie that meant we won the league. And it was fun. It was fun to clinch it in Bracknell too, after getting booed for 2 years every time we went to that rink. So.
Let's talk about a guy. Let's talk about his hockey ability, his hockey nice. Before we go on to, like, he's been in Belfast right from the start, bar a little time he took away in the middle of the comp before he came back. Rob Stewart, what a defenseman Rob Stewart was for the Belfast Giants.
Oh, unbelievable! He had this ability to just slow the game down, and not that he was a slow player, but he was as calm. The league kept getting better and better, and he improved with it. I don't know how, because I used to just wish I had that kind of patience. He would just sit there and toe drag a guy in the blue line, blast a shot. And, like, I mean, if you broke down his skill set, he's not a huge guy. He didn't hit hard. Like, he didn't crush guys. But he had a cannon of a shot. He was so smart on the power play. He's one of those guys that just, like, it was just fun playing with him. And you realized why back then, like, he never did more in North America. Cause at the time, probably when he was coming up, a defenseman had to be 6'1", 6'2" to even get a look at anything. Right. And nowadays, a more skilled, smaller defenseman, not that he's small, but he's 5'10 or whatever. He might tell you he's 5'11 or 6 foot, but he certainly isn't. And I mean, just a great skilled player, really fun to watch. And like, one of the best captains I remember in my time. I don't know. It's one of the things I always remember when I talk to our captains about always having the back. Like he never bitched about a coach or an owner to the team, and if he didn't believe in, like if he didn't agree with something Wiss was doing, he would go in and talk to him, but he would always straighten you out too. And I think nowadays, players are often too nice to each other. But if he heard someone bitching about like travel or this or that, he would just be like, shut the hell up, guys. What are we complaining about? And he would just and then you just shut up. As soon as Stewie told you to shut up, you just all kind of calm down, and sometimes you need that, because hockey players, like anything, it's like you have a lot more time. You're on the bus a lot, so people bitch a lot, and it's not us back then or anyone in Bracknell or anything. It's every hockey team. They just the more time you give them, the more they'll bitch about stuff. And Stewie was pretty good at like just telling us all to kind of realize what we're doing. We're playing a game for a living, and we've got it pretty good here. So. And as a guy, like one of my favorite guys, one of my best friends through hockey all over the years, one of the biggest things I miss about moving away from Belfast is missing hanging out with Stewie.
I think one of my favorite stories, or not stories, one of my favorite memories of Stewie is he came back. He obviously he coached the team, didn't work out. He went away. I think he coached in Sheffield, and maybe went back to Longford or something for a bit as well. He came back to Belfast in the 05-06 season, the Theo Courtney that season. And on his first night back, he scores maybe one of the sweetest blue line sweet slap shots you'll ever see. He had that cannon you're talking about.
Oh, I remember that. That was one of my favorite things that I got to be involved with, because we were having trouble with that year. We had some injuries, and Ed Courtney asked if I knew any D-men, and I was like, Rob Stewart, and he's like, no, and I'm like, he's been skating with us all summer. He's exactly the same player as he was 3 4 years ago, and when Ed sort of said like, this is you're vouching for him. It was like it's like an Italian mob movie. You're vouching for him. I expect like you're putting your ass on the line kind of to bring him in. And I was very happy that he scored the first game. And I played a lot with Stewie that year when because we won the league that year. And yeah, I played a lot with him that year. And
Let's rewind before we talk about that league victory. Back to the playoff win in the last year of what would have been the NASL then. Johnny
Yeah,
coming
that's
up, I
that.
think, with sorry?
Johnny. Yeah,
Yeah,
Johnny.
Johnny coming up with 2 goals in the playoff final. That was quite a run to the playoffs, and then coming up with that final against London and ultimately
Well,
winning it all.
that was cool that year. That was probably the funnest, maybe the funnest team I ever, like if I think the year before was the best team as far as skill level, the funnest year of hockey for me as a player was that year with when we won the playoffs. Those 2 seasons kind of like morph into one because a lot of the guys are similar players, but I was really good buddies with Cruiser. Really loved that guy, and that was a fun team. Kuwabara, Dougie McDonald, Sorokin, Sandrock, who obviously I became really good buddies with. Like we just had such a good group of guys. Like just that was the tightest team I've ever run on for sure. And we missed the league out by a point, I think, in the last weekend of the season. We should have probably won the league. Thorts was on that team. Thorts was I mean, we didn't we basically went undefeated almost when Thorts joined the team. That was the year we went to the Continental Cup. Thorts joined the team at Christmas. We kind of went on a huge run then. He was sort of the final piece of the puzzle. And you think of like, some of my best friends in hockey from that year, including Thorts. I blame him though. We always bugged Thorts because we flew to every game until the day Steve Thornton got there. And that was when money troubles were first kind of rearing their ugly head in Belfast, when the Super League was kind of on the brink. And we'd been told at Christmas that we were getting, we were struggling to pay the wages, but for the one month in December. And so we'd all gone away and like we had like a week off, and a few of us went to Lanzarote and stuff, and we were like, how can they be struggling to pay the wages? And now when you're on this side of things and you see all the costs, you can see why. But And then we come back and we've signed Steve Thornton. We're all like, how can we afford to do this if we're struggling to pay wages? And then all of a sudden we went from flying to every game to taking the bus. We drive to the ferry, take the bus to Cardiff, turn around, come back the next day. There was a legendary story of, I think it might have been our first road trip after we started busing, and we played in London, I think, on a Friday, and then we had in Bracknell on the Sunday. And Paul Cruise had said, like, kind of jokingly, but kind of not jokingly, he said, like, all right, we've got to go into these games, and like, we've got to lose. Like, we cannot win these games, because if we win these games, they're going to tell us that we have to drive to every single game for the rest of the season. So we went to London, and it was like, you're not gonna try to lose, right? So we all play hard. We win the game, like, I don't know what it was, 4-2 or 4-3, and London was a big rival of ours that year. And then afterwards, Cruz is like, all right, boys, well, we're in Bracknell in 2 days. We got to have a pub crawl. We can't win in Bracknell. And so Saturday, I'm like, I shouldn't be telling these stories, because fans will be appalled at this, because this is very unlike you wouldn't see this happening now. And probably was the only time in our whole career we did this. But we, like, literally went on a pub crawl on the Saturday around London. And we all got home maybe 3 in the morning. Corey Carlander probably got home at about 8 in the morning. And we went into Bracknell the next day. We were all hungover. And basically, we were just like, this is ridiculous. We haven't been paid. We're going to lose the game. That'll show ownership. That'll show them that we need to fly to these games. It's so stupid of how you're thinking. And I think we beat them like 11-2 or something like that. I think Carlander had a hat trick in the first period. It was insane. And then we never flew to another game the rest of the year.
Obviously, at the end of that, the high of winning the playoffs, and then you go into a summer of confusion. You don't really know what's going to be happening with the club, the elite league setting up, the ISL's collapsing. Was that a time where you wondered what was going to happen with your career, or were you focused on making Belfast work?
No, I was fully committed to quitting hockey, actually. I got a job. I went home to Calgary. I got a job. I interviewed for as many jobs as I can. I got a sales job, and I was working away, and I was staying in touch with Stewie, because the league, no one was really sure of the league, what was happening. So I'd kind of stayed in touch with Stewie, and it got to be like late July, and I was actually funny enough, I was at Steve King, who's one of the owners of the Devils. I was at his house, and he lived across. Well, he my sister didn't live there at the time, but my sister lives across the street from Steve now. My sister and her husband. But so Steve has a house on this lake, and we are at the lake. So we swam over to Steve's house, and then we were all hanging out. And it was my sister and a few of her friends, and we're all talking. And one of my sister's friends, who's a teacher, said, "Oh, so when are you going back?" And I said, "Oh, I'm not. I got a regular job, and I'm just gonna, like, kind of done the hockey thing, and it's not, I'm not getting rich doing it or anything." And she goes, "But you love it." And I'm like, "Yeah." And she said, "What, are you stupid?" She's like, "We go to work every day, and we wish we had jobs like you guys had. And what are you doing? Who cares if it's a don't, just go back and play till your legs fall off." And I went home, and I was like, "Yeah, you're right." And I called Stewie, called Stewie, and came back. And that's why I came back, because this girl named Kelly, who actually came and visited us in Cardiff last year, she talked me into it. She didn't even have to talk to me. She just kind of gave me the speech about, like, sometimes you need to hear it. Like, what are you doing, man? Sometimes you have these ideas in your head that it's the right thing to do to, get a regular job or whatever. And I'm glad I did, because I went back, played, a few more years, and the rest is the rest.
That was a kind of turning point for almost British hockey as well, where local players, British players, became much more involved in the league. And obviously, our own guys coming in, Mark Marsh and Graham Walden, I know Gareth Martin, all those guys started getting Chris McGimsey maybe as well. Was that difficult for you guys to have those guys coming in, or did you embrace them? Like, that first season was difficult for students, get it wrong. Like, Jason Ruff was incredible, carried that team. He had the guts of 100 points. Brad
100%.
Kenny scored against all the crap teams. We had our problems that season. Sean Burns came in, was a bit of a high point for a few weeks, but
Few
it was a
weeks, yeah.
difficult season.
Yeah, I mean, the hardest part for us was going from the high of the Super League, the quality of the Super League, to what the Elite League was the first year. And you went from essentially four line hockey. You basically went from what you have right now, quality four line hockey, very professional, high level imports. Like you're talking, you're getting Jason Ruffs and these guys are like playing in the DEL coming to the British League. So, and all of a sudden you go from that to, no offense to these guys, but like, Brad Kenny coming in and getting 7 points in the second night of the season, and you're like, oh man. And I remember we played Basingstoke, maybe our second or third game, and we were in Basingstoke and we were crushing them, like crushing them. And Wardy skated over to me and he said, you want to just quit right now and pretend this season never happened? We were 3 games in. He goes, we could just retire and remember the Super League. We'll just go out as playoff champions. Should we just quit right now? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And it was like middle of the second period in Basingstoke. All their imports had failed to get like flights on time or visas on time. So we were basically playing a full squad of like young British players, and we were just crushing them. And it was not fun for fans. Like you were basically playing two and a half line hockey and four defense. And if Colin Ward got hurt for I think January, and we basically lost every single game because we relied completely on I think it was Bozy, Kurt Bowen. I
Yeah.
think it was Kurt, Jason, and Wardy played on the top line, right? And that was pretty much our scoring. And then the second line was Paxton, Sample, and Kenny. And then our third line was Mo. Who was on our third line? Mo was with Gareth Martin,
I think
and
JB could Boosie play it up, didn't they?
Bozy played a bit of forward, yeah. And I mean, it's not a cut on what those guys brought to the team. It's just, it was, as a fan, you went from sold out arenas and all imports to three line hockey and more like, two and a half line hockey. And like, let's be honest, the quality of, when we go from playing six defense to playing four defense for the whole night, and me and Johnny were basically on the line, we would play 35 minutes a game, and it wasn't, whereas before we were playing 20 minutes a game. It's just the quality had gone down. But then you think of some of those guys, like one of my favorite things about that changeover, like it probably the first year I didn't love, but then, I got back into it. When it got to, like the year with Tony was fun, Tony Hand, but then when Ed came in, it got really good, and Theo came in, and but like, I don't know, you're not going to meet three better guys, at least, in my opinion, from Mo Train, Graham Walton, and Chris McGimsey, and a lot of import guys, don't really take the time to get to know the locals as much as they should. One of the things I'd say about my teams now is that there's no imports and locals. It's just everyone's a teammate. But those first couple of years, I think people really looked down on some of the imports. Like some of the older guys maybe didn't embrace them as much on other teams. But on our team, like you got to think it was me, Wardy, Packer, Ruffles. We just loved those guys, and we became tight with them. Like I used to hang out. I probably hung out with Gimper and Mo and Wally more than I hung out with most of the guys on the team. I love those guys. Great, just great guys. And then they kind of helped save the team, And you think of like the Mo Train became kind of a legend in his own town, and then Wally retired as the player that had played the most games in Devils or in Giants history. Sorry. I don't know. Great guys. Love those guys. And like just part of the interesting history of the Belfast Giants,
We go on a season then, Stewie, as we've talked about, moves on. Tony Hand comes in as a big.
Stewie got screwed, by the way. Let's
Oh,
be
yeah.
honest. Completely got screwed. And I can say it now because I'm long gone. But man, all they asked him to do was to not finish below fourth place and to make sure that he got it. He stuck on budget, and he did. For a guy that's one of the best guys in hockey, he definitely got screwed. So, but it happens. It's a sport.
It happened, and
You
we're
know?
glad that he was able to come back, and
Yeah.
we'll go on that. The following season, Tony Hahn comes in as head coach, and I think that was that maybe the lockout season in the NHL.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
don't think we took the opportunity to bring anybody in, but with Neil Engelstad, obviously, it was a bit of a
Yeah.
head case that
Yeah.
season with Dermot Kelly. The good story of the
Yeah.
guys coming to the ice pool, flew himself
Yeah.
to try and
Yeah.
get a job,
Oh.
and of course there was I was going to say there was silverware that season. There was a little bit of glassware that season. We won the Crossover Cup, and I don't know if you can
Yeah.
remember. I think it was I can't remember if it was Guildford we played in the deciding game, but Roman Cavalier scores the winner and does the row the boat celebration at centre ice.
I remember that. Yeah, Jesus. I remember that. That's hilarious. If you remember that year, the Bracknell team was probably better than most of the teams in our league. Guildford was pretty close to it. Guildford had an NHLer, but Bracknell had that one year. They had Pete Campbell on that team in Bracknell. Man, yeah, they were good. That's the year I lost my nose, I think. I think that's the year. Yeah, with Tony, when Matthew Myers cut my nose off.
Did you ever talk to him about that? Because I haven't really forgiven him.
Yeah, no, I brought it up when we first signed him the first year, because he obviously, it's not a story he tells, it's one I don't mind telling. So yeah, but yeah, that was a strange year. I cut my nose off, and then remember I had to wear a face shield for like, I was supposed to wear it for the rest of the year, and I think I wore it for about 4 weeks before I took it off again. But yeah, it was not a fun year for injuries, because after going, I think I'd gone up to that point without ever getting injured and missing a game, and then the nose thing, I only missed I think 3 games with my nose getting cut off. But yeah, I broke my foot in the first game of playoffs, but and then, so I didn't practice the rest of the time, but I just played games, and in my head, like a spiral fracture in my heel. So that it was just that was a year I'd like to forget as far as injuries go.
Well, talk. I have to ask you about Mel Engelstad. Like, one of the toughest minor league guys that ever played the game. Came the belt, wasn't really called upon that much for his kind of fighting. There was allegations that Tony wasn't allowing him to fight and stuff. I remember two nights, I guess. The one night that he fought Eric Kearns
Yeah.
and Cornish on the same night,
Yeah.
and
Oh God.
one
I
night that
know.
he supermaned into a scrum. The cross checks on me in the head. I can't
Yeah.
remember who he did, but like he was slightly
I think
unhinged.
he ended up hitting Johnny though. I think Johnny was like tied up with the guy, and Johnny turns around and sees Engelstad coming full speed. He was a beauty. I really liked him. He was a good guy. But he fought Cairns and Cornish the same game, and he knew he was going to do it. He just knew he was going to do it. And then afterwards, he went and talked to Cairns and got him to sign a stick. So, yeah, it's too bad, because he went to Newcastle next year, and then I think he got like in a stick swinging incident and he got thrown out of the league or something like that. But, yeah, good guy, really good guy.
The next season is possibly one of the most rememberable ones from a fan's perspective, from a player's perspective, obviously, as well. The story of
That with
how it all
Theo,
came about, Johnny meeting, oh, what do you call him, Jim Jaworski,
Jim Jaworski.
and everything that came after. And all of a sudden, come late September, October, Theo Fleury is playing for the Belfast Giants.
I know, it's still crazy. It's still crazy, and the funny thing is, you could probably like Theo's story of how he got to Belfast is just as crazy as Johnny's story about meeting Jim Jaworski on a plane. Like, it's nuts. It's crazy. Yeah, Theo Fleury, like my childhood hero, playing for us in Belfast. One of the craziest things that's ever happened, I think. And a lot of fans started watching the Belfast Giants. They're probably still watching now because Theo Fleury was on the team, you know? And
Do you remember his first night?
of course, yeah, like it was
How
yesterday.
crazy, wasn't it?
Crazy. It was like one of the best. I just remember him walking around the dressing room before the game in his like jock strap and no shirt on, and I was like, man, this guy must be 40 pounds overweight. And the thing is, like, I watched him my whole life, right? I love the guy. Like, literally my favorite player ever to play for Calgary Flames, Theo Fleury. And I skipped school to go to the Stanley Cup parade in 1989 and was front row screaming to Theo Fleury. And And yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. And so yeah, I was really nervous when he came in, 'cause like I didn't know how to take it. We'd heard the stories. He'd been, you know, he'd been on the sauce, and he was trying to get over his addictions and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, everyone, I was expecting the worst. I was expecting a terrible teammate and a terrible guy, and just like wouldn't have cared about us, just kind of there to get his shit back together. And quite the opposite. Great teammate, great guy, very generous, very open with his stories about like the NHL. The poor guy probably, I hope he likes telling stories. He's a hell of a storyteller. And I told him after about 3 days, I was just like, listen, man, I know you're probably gonna only play here for a year, and I know you're not drinking or anything, so anytime you need to stay in the hotel, one of us will stay with you. Probably a few of us will stay with you, but you have to tell us your stories. And he told us every story. Told us the great ones on the on ice, the off ice stuff. He told us some crazy ones. He told us some scary ones, and a lot of funny ones. And the best part is, like, if I'm telling a story and it involves Paxton and Wardy, he's telling a story that involves Gretzky and
I
Messier. So.
heard one story from that season. I think these were maybe playing Edinburgh away or something, and it was, you're running the score up. It's 5 or 6 after the second period. We're in the second intermission, and somebody said, "Right, come on, lads, let's slow it down
Our
a wee bit in the
coach
third period here." And he's
did.
like, "F them, let's try and score 100."
Yeah. That was our coach. It might have been the first night. It might have been that first night against Edinburgh.
Right.
Yeah, I think it might have been, because Ed like stayed in the coach's office, then he'd come in because he was a player coach, right? And he'd come in, and he came in and he said, "Hey guys, that's like one of my best friends over there, Tony Hand. I don't want to embarrass him anymore. He basically gave me this job, got me this job, and got me the interview with Belfast. He's the reason that I was able to come here. I just want to show him a bit of respect. So we're just let's just rein it in. Let's just, you know, get through the next one. Let's not score any more goals." And then he walked out of the room, and Theo stood up and said, "Dad, sorry about this. If there's kids listening, not a chance. We're gonna score 100. If we keep running it up, keep running it up. There's no way I'm stopping." And I think that was when, if you remember, he found out who Tony Hand was. And this is Theo. Like, I mean, this is probably why he's in the NHL, because he was a prick and on the ice. Like, he found out which one, because that's the first, like, I know he'd heard about Tony Hand, but like, you know, British legend, all this stuff. And he just wanted to embarrass him. He wanted to show that he was a better hockey player than him. And that's, I mean, he's ultra competitive. I remember in Cardiff one time, Sacchettini lined up for a faceoff and said to Theo, "Hey man, I just want to say you're one of my favorite NHL players of all time. You're a big reason why I love hockey." And Fleury put him in a headlock off the opening draw and basically said, "Don't ever talk to me like that on the ice ever again. You know, like, I'm your enemy tonight." And just gave it to him about ever saying that. And then I said, "What did he say?" And he said, "Oh, he said I was one of his favorite players, and I don't want that." He said, I want him to bring his best. I want him to hack me and slash me." And it's true. Like, if you didn't hack Theo and slash him in practice, he used to scream at you, scream at you. Like, easily the most competitive guy I ever played with. And we didn't see him at his best, right? Like, I can't imagine when he was 23 in the NHL going up against, like, because there's lots of small guys in the NHL now. There wasn't back then. Like, people don't even realize, like, Theron Fleury should never have made the NHL, because he was playing at a time when forwards are huge, and there was fighting every night, and there was clutching and grabbing, and you know, there wasn't DOPS to sort stuff out, and people were trying to take your head off and butt end you all the time, and he was mixing up with all of them, and I mean, he's a legend, and that's why, like, Theron Fleury, for what he did in the NHL at that time, is insane. If he was that size playing now, it wouldn't be that out of sorts, really, you know, because there's lots of skilled small guys, but he was not, you know, he's playing a big man's game at the time when the biggest men mattered, you know.
I think it's kind of undoubted if Theo didn't have his off ice problems, he'd be in the Hall of Fame now.
Still should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I
Still should be in
agree.
the Hall
I
of Fame.
agree, but I think that's the
They'll
way
come to their
it is.
senses. They got to come to their senses at one point. Like, I mean, for what he did for hockey, for what he did, I bet there's umpteen small guys that played the game purely because of Theron Fleury. You know,
you talk
he
about his
inspired.
competitive edge on that
Yeah.
very first night. You know, he goes and grabs, I think it's Freddie Adoya, he's sadly no longer with us. He goes and grabs Edinburgh's biggest player after scoring four goals or whatever it was, two assists, three assists, seven
three,
points. Now,
three goals.
Goes and grabs
three
the biggest
goals.
guy and puts up a big fight.
Yeah, beats the crap out of him. Even said, it was. I think that was in the third period, because it was either in the second or the third, but he asked, he said, who's their toughest guy? And I was like, whatever his name is, Adoye or whatever. And he's like, okay. And that's when we were actually like, oh, Christ, here we go. He's not going to, like, now this is getting ridiculous. Because before the game, he actually got the stats from the league. And he came over and he's like, and I mean, he was all showman at that time. He came over and he goes, he's like, hey, who's this guy? I think it was Tessier, Dan Tessier. I think he was lead the league in scoring. It might have been him, or it might have been someone in Nottingham. I can't remember. But whoever it was, he said, who's this guy? And he was, because remember, Theo started like 10 games into the season or 6 games in or something, right? And this guy had, you know, a 20-point lead or something. And he said, do you think I gave him enough of a head start? And we were loving it, but we were actually kind of laughing, going like, man, he's 40 pounds overweight. He's 20 points behind. He's not going to. And then he gets 9 points or 7 points the first night. We're like, oh, he just might do it. And sure enough, he did.
And, you know, we go on to win the championship. One of my favorite things, and we never did it again, we put the lucky loony under centre ice before the start of the season that year. I remember it was Theo or somebody came at the night we got
Jim,
the.
It was Jaworski. It was Jimmy Jaworski.
Was it?
Yeah.
The night we got the Monty Fool and everybody got their cigar, somebody went to centre ice and like dug it out with an ice pick. It was just that's a really good memory.